Today, what AI knows about housing affordability that our leaders duck? Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is post covering finance and property news. I thought I'd try an experiment today using AI to examine Australian housing affordability. So I did some research with Copilot. I started with the question of why home prices in Australia are so high relative to incomes. The reply seems, well, remarkably on point. In summary, Australia faces one of the most acute housing affordability crises in the developed world. Over the past several decades, home prices have surged far beyond the pace of income growth, making it increasingly difficult for average Australians to enter the property market. This is because of a complex interplay of economic, political, and cultural factors. Addressing these issues will require coordinated efforts across all levels of government, including migration, planning reform, investment in affordable housing, and a re-evaluation of tax policies that currently favour investors over owner-occupiers. They went on to explain 8 factors to explain the problem. The first was long-term price growth versus wage stagnation. Since the 1970s, Australian home prices have increased by more than 3,400%, while wages have grown by around 1,180%. In the past 2 decades alone, house prices have risen more than twice as fast as wages. This widening gap has made home ownership increasingly unattainable for many Australians, especially first-time buyers. The second factor relates to supply constraints and planning regulations. One of the most cited reasons for high home prices is the chronic undersupply of housing. Australia has not built enough homes to keep pace with its growing population. Restrictive zoning laws and complex planning regulations, particularly in major cities like Sydney and Melbourne, limit the construction of higher density housing where demand is strongest. The third relates to population growth and urban concentration. Australia's population has grown rapidly due to high levels of immigration, especially in urban centres. This has intensified demand in cities where land is scarce and infrastructure is already under pressure. The result, fierce competition for limited housing stock, driving house prices higher. The next relates to government policy and tax incentives. Government policies have historically favoured property investors through mechanisms like negative gearing and capital gains tax discounts. These incentives have encouraged speculative investment in housing, inflating demand and prices beyond what owner-occupiers can afford. The fifth one relates to low interest rates and easy credit. For much of the 2000s and 2010s, Australia experienced historically low interest rates. This made borrowing cheaper and allowed buyers to take on larger mortgages, which in turn pushed up prices. Even with recent rate hikes, the legacy of cheap credit continues to shape the market. The sixth one relates to cultural and psychological factors. Homeownership is deeply embedded in the Australian psyche as a symbol of success and security. This cultural emphasis has led to strong demand for property, even in the face of rising prices. Real estate is also seen as a reliable investment, further fueling demand. The next relates to the decline in public and affordable housing. The reduction in public housing stock and limited investment in affordable housing options have pushed more people into the private market. This has increased competition for rental properties and entry-level homes, exacerbating affordability issues. And number 8, climate and natural disasters. Climate change has rendered some areas less habitable due to bushfires, floods, and storms. This has concentrated demand in safer, more resilient regions, further inflating prices in those areas. Well, and that, to my mind, was a pretty comprehensive summary. So then I asked about DFA's views on housing affordability, and here is the reply. Digital Finance Analytics paints a sobering picture of Australian housing affordability, describing it as a complex and worsening issue, driven by both demand and supply-side pressures. On the demand side, uncoordinated immigration, a surge in migration, international students, and speculative investment fueled by low interest rates and tax incentives have all intensified competition for housing. On the supply side, poorly managed land releases, restrictive zoning laws, and developers hoarding land have slowed the creation of affordable housing stock. The social impacts, of course, are significant. Essential workers like teachers and nurses are priced out of the communities they serve, and young adults are delaying independence, and older Australians are often stuck in unsuitable housing. So in terms of what can be done, DFA supports a multi-pronged policy response, including better coordination of immigration and housing policy, reforming tax incentives that encourage speculative investment, and accelerating land releases and streamlining planning approvals, and encouraging higher density housing in well-connected urban areas. They didn't quite get that right. They also stress the need for cross-government collaboration to avoid creating housing hotspots that threaten broader economic sustainability. Then I asked how my views compared with other experts, and the reply was that Digital Finance Analytics views align with many expert perspectives, but it also adds sharper edges to the conversation. Here's how it compares. Where experts agree, they said, supply shortages are central. Most experts, including those from the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute and the Actuaries Institute, agree that a chronic undersupply of housing, especially affordable and social housing, is a key driver of crisis. Planning and regulation are bottlenecks. Like DFA, many point to restrictive zoning and slow planning approvals as major barriers. The federal government has echoed this, blaming a thicket of red tape that makes building homes too hard. Tax incentives distort the market, with experts widely criticising policies like negative gearing and capital gains tax discounts for fueling speculative investment and inflating prices. But where DFA stands out is a sharper focus on demand-side pressures. DFA places more emphasis on immigration, international students and investor activity as demand shocks, areas some experts touch but don't always prioritise. And there's also a call for cross-government coordination. While others advocate for systemic reform, DFA is particularly vocal about the need for integrated policy across federal, state and local levels to avoid creating housing hotspots. And interestingly, they also referred to the intergenerational inequality, with the Actuaries Institute highlighting young Australians being locked out of home ownership, with ownership among 25 to 34-year-olds dropping from over 50% to just 37% in 2 decades, something which my surveys show, of course, too. And climate and insurance stress is also significant, with some experts now factoring in climate risk, noting that affordability isn't just about price, it's all about rising insurance costs in vulnerable regions. So in short, Copilot says DFA's views are well within the expert consensus, but brings a more pointed critique of demand-side dynamics and policy fragmentation. So then I asked about the impact of all this on younger renting households, and they said that young renters in Australia are feeling the full weight of the housing affordability crisis, and the views from Digital Finance Analytics and other experts help to explain why. Firstly, skyrocketing rents. With low vacancy rates and high demand, rents have surged, especially in major cities. Young people, often early in their careers or studying, are least equipped to absorb those costs. Delayed independence results, with many young adults staying longer in the family home or relying heavily on parental support to afford rent or to save for a deposit. For some, intergenerational wealth is now the only viable path to home ownership. Interestingly, they didn't specifically mention the bank of mum and dad. In regard to homelessness risk, alarmingly young people aged 19 to 24 have the highest rate of homelessness in Australia. And mental health and social strain is a factor too. The stress of housing insecurity is contributing to rising mental health issues, with many young Australians feeling they're missing out on key life experiences like moving out, building careers, or forming relationships because housing is so unaffordable. And then Copilot went on to say that DFA's emphasis on demand-side pressures like immigration and investor activity helps explains why competition for rentals are so fierce. They call for cross-government coordination, highlighting how fragmented policies are failing to protect vulnerable renters. In short, young renters are caught in a perfect storm of high costs, limited supply, and policy inertia, which I think is spot on. Finally, I asked about policy options to address these issues. Copilot said Digital Finance Analytics advocates a multi-layered policy overhaul to tackle Australia's housing affordability crisis. Their approach emphasises both demand and supply-side reforms, with a strong focus on coordination across all levels of government. So the key policy recommendations from DFA include better coordination of immigration and housing policy, highlighting how uncoordinated immigration, especially around university hubs, has intensified demand in already stretched markets. DFA argues for aligning migration targets with housing capacity to avoid creating affordability hotspots. Reform of tax incentives and current tax settings, like negative gearing and capital gains tax discounts, encourage speculative investment. DFA supports reforming those incentives to reduce investor-driven demand and to cool price inflation. And accelerated land release and planning reforms. On the supply side, DFA calls out restrictive zoning laws, slow planning approvals, and land hoarding by developers. So they advocate for faster land releases and streamlining planning to boost housing supply where it's needed most. And then cross-government policy alignment, which is a recurring theme in DFA's analysis. The lack of a coordination between federal, state, and local governments is an issue. They argue this fragmentation has led to poor outcomes and market distortions, and they push for integrated housing strategies across jurisdictions. And then another one is support for key workers and vulnerable groups, where DFA stresses that essential workers like teachers, nurses, and police are being priced out of the communities they serve. So they support targeted housing initiatives to ensure that those groups can live near their workplaces. Monitoring investment and foreign buyer activity, DFA also points to the role of international students and foreign investors in driving up prices in certain areas, so they recommend tighter oversight and data transparency to manage those demand pressures more effectively. In essence, DFA sees housing affordability not as a single issue problem, but as a systemic failure requiring bold, coordinated action. But there is a now question of to how DFA's recommendations stack up with what's actually being rolled out in Australia. Well, according to Copilot, there are areas where policy and DFA align. For example, boosting supply. The government's National Housing Accord aims to build 1.2 million new homes over 5 years from July 2024, which they say echoes DFA's call for accelerated land release and planning reform, except, of course, that they didn't go on to say there's no chance they're going to meet that 1.2 million because of all the issues that I discuss regularly. Then they go on to talk about the support for affordable and social housing through the $10 billion Housing Australia Future Fund and the $2 billion Social Housing Accelerator, through which the government plans to deliver 30,000 new social and affordable homes. Now, they speculate that I would welcome this, especially for key workers and vulnerable groups. And to an extent I do, but again, we know that the HAF has issues with its funding, and the capacity to deliver is in question. And then Copilot talks about the build-to-rent incentives. Tax concessions are being introduced to encourage build-to-rent developments, which could ease rental pressures. Now, it's interesting that Copilot thinks I'd support that, but as you know, I've argued that the build-to-rent revolution with the tax breaks is actually part of the problem, not part of the solution. Renter protections under the Better Deal for Renters initiatives, reforms including limited rent increases to once a year and requiring genuine grounds for eviction, while it's not a core DFA focus, this aligns with their broader concerns of housing stability. I think that's about right. But there are gaps, massive gaps, and in fact, Copilot calls them out. So where the gaps remain? Firstly, tax reform, negative gearing and CGD discounts. DFA strongly advocates for reforming those investor-friendly tax settings. So far, no major changes have been made, and it remains politically sensitive and largely untouched. Immigration and housing coordination. DFA emphasises aligning migration with housing capacity. While the government acknowledges population pressures, there's little evidence of integrated planning between immigration and housing policy. And cross-government coordination, where DFA calls for unified action across federal, state and local levels, while the National Housing and Homelessness Plan aims to improve collaboration, implementation is still fragmented, and outcomes vary widely by state. And with regard to investor and foreign buyer oversight, DFA wants tighter monitoring of investor activity. Current policies are light touch, with limited transparency or enforcement mechanisms in this space. So in short, they say, while the government is making meaningful moves on supply and renter support, demand-side reforms and systemic coordination, which are DFA's big-ticket items, are still lagging. I think that's a very interesting summary, and I actually largely agree with what it's saying, because I was a politician and was thinking about what I would need to do, well, actually, Copilot lays it all out pretty much soup to nuts. And yet we have a government that is actually hooking a lot of the issues and ignoring many of the others. So my bottom line question is simply this. Perhaps government should consider using AI to develop policy rather than listening to those spruikers from the building and construction sector, or maybe from the banks, or maybe from Treasury, who have a particular set of agendas that are actually driving outcomes which are suboptimal, to put it mildly. The bottom line is this. Maybe we should leave it to AI, because the politicians have pretty much failed us, and the current mob are absolutely no better. Without significant joined-up thinking, and without really diving into the critical issues that must be addressed, housing affordability will continue to become more adverse, particularly as interest rates are cut, which is just plain weird. So my bottom line is this. I'll give AI 9 out of 10. I'll give the government 2 out of 10. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high. Price discovery and price transparency are hard to find. And then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.